Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Tivoli Talk, End-to-End Automation Now on Z05 with the new Tivoli SA Application Manager Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Norbert Lenz. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My name is Norbert Lenz. I'm a software architect in the Böblingen Development Lab. I would like to take you through an overview of System Automation Application Manager with a special focus on the thrilling new functions, especially our new System Z and ZUS support. I do have in the talk a couple of animated charts, so it would be best if you download the charts and use the slideshow to follow the presentation. Let's move on to page 2 containing copyright and trademark. I don't need to talk about that. Page 3, the agenda. I would like to first give you a very short overview about the system automation product family, about the basic principles, how it works. Then, as a second part, give you a very short overview about our distributed product, which does automated operations and high availability for distributed platforms. And then the main focus will be in the third part on the System Automation Application Manager. I will go over all its end-to-end automation functions and then have also a special focus on the new functions coming up. At the end of the talk, I will then ask for questions, so if you have questions, please note them down and we will have a question and answering session at the very end. Okay, let's move on to chart 4, the system automation basic principles. System automation is all about automated operations, which is the capability to automatically start and stop complex applications, so we can stop and start resources organized in a large tree. These resources can be grouped into groups. You can put groups into groups and stack them to an arbitrary nesting level and reach an arbitrary abstraction level when monitoring the operational availability of these resources. You can also have relationships like starts after, stops before, falls down by, co-located, and so forth. And this we call the automation policy. Now, also we supply continuous availability, which means that we monitor these resources, and if anything breaks, according to the policy, we can then figure out where to restart the application, either in place or on a backup node and so forth. The way it works is that we have an automation engine, which is an abstract reasoning engine, and which can reason about these policies. So it reads the policies. After the policy is activated, the engine sits there and waits for external triggers, which could be an operator command taking down or starting a resource. It could be an event that something breaks and we detect that something has gone away or has come up. Could be scheduler-driven things, or it could be orchestration that we have a new node and which we must include into automation. The engine, after being triggered by such an external trigger, figures out what to do according to the policy, and then it interacts with the agent who really knows how certain resources are started and stopped. That is the basic principle, and this is how all products in our product family work. Let's move on to page 5. On page 5, you see our roadmap. It all started with System Automation ZOS about 12 years ago. Sometime later, we took the automation engine I already talked about, ported it to distributed platforms, and right now our product system automation for multi-platforms is available on Linux, on all hardware platforms which are supported by Linux. It also is ported to AIX, it is ported to Windows, and soon you will see that it's also available on Sun Solaris. As a next step, we have the capability to not only make these clustered environments for these different platforms and for the ZOS Sysplex highly available, but also tie this together in an end-to-end way such that you can manage and monitor and analyze end-to-end applications running in a multi-tiered environment. So you can manage multiple clusters, and you can also manage dependencies between these clusters. These clusters can be of the same kind or of different kinds. And by the way, this end-to-end manager has the capability to not only manage system automation for multi-platforms or system automation for ZOS, but also, for example, MSCS clusters running on Windows, HACMP clusters running on AIX, or, for example, Veritas Cluster Server clusters running on Sun Solaris. The new name for this end-to-end automation function will be System Automation Application Manager, and it is the topic of this talk. Actually, System Automation Application Manager will become available soon, and it has been pre-announced in a statement of direction in the GDPS 3.5 announcement at the end of February during the SHARE conference. As a next step and final step, we are talking about business continuity and about including disaster recovery. So with this step, we do not only care about end-to-end automation, but rather also about being able to manage multiple sites. We have site awareness. We worry about data replication between these sites, recovering from complete site losses, and also integrating human processes during disaster recovery. Like, for example, you must analyze how severe a problem is. You must have a management decision when to evacuate a site and turn over to the backup site. So this process management step is integrated with the operational management products in this step. Okay, now this is our roadmap towards business continuity. And let's move on now to page 6. Our vision for the business continuity is, first of all, we do not want to recover the bits and pieces and the platform technology, but rather we want to recover the business for the customer. So it's supposed to become a business-oriented solution, recovering the business rather than some platform technology. It's truly end-to-end. Second point, it's highly automated, so we want to have it pre-canned, pre-tested. You define these policies, and when it's tested, it can be handled by less skilled operators, especially in the case of a disaster. If you don't have the best people at the recovery place, you are still sure to succeed. Perhaps most important of all, the lowest bullet on this chart says we want to leverage existing custom and IBM investments. So whatever the customer has installed as his application management products on the clusters, could be our products, could also be the other cluster management products, with the end-to-end product, with the application manager, we want to integrate them and not force the customer to implement something totally new. So this approach is open and it's bottom-up and protects the investment. New is that we offer these functions now, especially for System C, so both the business continuity process manager and the system automation application manager will be made available on System C, especially the application manager will be running on ZOS also. Okay, let's move on to page 7. We would now very shortly summarize what the system automation for multi-platforms, the base product, is all about. On page 8, you see that system automation for multi-platforms gives you, like the system automation for ZOS product, automated operations and high availability for applications running on Linux, AIX, Windows, and very soon also on Sun Solaris. If you press enter now, this is an animated chart. You see that we can deal with clustered environments, and for supporting this cluster infrastructure, we have incorporated into the System Automation for Multi-Platforms product the IBM RSCT, Reliable and Scalable Cluster Technology, which is the cluster infrastructure from the AIX clusters. So this is shipped with our product and is running, and this gives us the cluster infrastructure on all these different platforms. If you press enter again, you see that on top of the cluster infrastructure, we have resource managers, which represent this agent code I have been talking about in the family principles. The resource managers really know how to interact with the resource, how to start and stop things, how to monitor things. If you press enter again, now we tie together these resource managers with the automation manager. The automation manager gives us the capability to reason about the automation policy and then to tell the resource managers when to start and stop things and bring things up and down and monitor things. Okay, pressing enter again, we move on to chart 9. It's again an animated chart. It shows you the benefits of the policy, the automation policy concept. Let us assume that we have a small cluster and we have an application, a web application, which has as prerequisites a virtual IP address and a database. Now, in the distributed world, say in the Unix world, you typically would write scripts to keep all these bits and pieces of the web application up and running on the different nodes, and also to specify where to recover if one of these nodes breaks and so forth. So imagine if you had to reconfigure either your cluster, change some names, add another node, or change the configuration of your application. Then you would have to start maintaining all these scripts and updating the code, retesting it, and so forth. With system automation, we don't have that. So we don't have these big scripts, but rather we have this abstract policy. Policy is very simple. You can define these resource groups we have already talked about. You can define relationships like starts after, stops before, and so forth. And new with our version 2.3, you can have incremental policy activation, so you can incrementally build up your policy to define the behavior of your applications step by step. Also, we do have template processing, which means you have predefined policies which you can download from the web, and except for, say, the host names, IP addresses, everything is predefined, and the template will pick up the host name, the IP addresses, and then you're ready to go. Okay, pressing enter again. We don't have scripts. So with these abstract policies, we allow the operator to control applications on a very abstract, on a business level. Operators don't need to know all these details. And you can add resources or systems very easily without rewriting the scripts. Now press enter again, and I have an animated chart now showing the power of these policies. The example is an SAP example. If you press enter again, you see that with an SAP application in a node, we need an NQ server, short ES. The NQ server is the mechanism for SAP to keep the logs. So this is the log manager. And then there is a message server and there is a virtual IP address. And these three must always run on the same node. The NQ server, the first rule in the policies up on the left-hand corner says NQ server, message server, and virtual IP address are co-located. So it's a very simple way of stating this. Now, there's an NQ replication server. This is essentially a copy of the log information. And this copy is kept so you can recover the logs if this primary node fails. So the NQ replication server is started after the NQ server. That is our rule 2 in the policy. And the NQ replication server is anti-collocated to the NQ server, which means that the NQ replication server must always run on a different node, which is very important to be able to recover. So it's very simple to formulate these complex things. Now let's press enter again and assume that our node fails, where we have the NQ server, the message server, and the Viper. Then the fourth rule kicks in, which says that the NQ server must be co-located to the NQ replication server if the NQ replication server is online but the NQ server is offline, which is the case after this node failure. So pressing enter again, you see that system automation, the automation engine figures out that these three resources must be co-located and they must be started on the same node where the NQ replication server resides. Now, as soon as they come up, the first rule doesn't hold anymore, but rather the third rule says NQ replication server is anti-co-located, which means that the NQ replication server is stopped and it moves on to the third node. Now we have reached a configuration where we can recover yet from another failure and are still highly available with our setup. So this example shows you, this is a real life example by the way, it shows you the power of this policy, and it's much more user friendly and easier to maintain than scripts. Okay, let's move on to page 11. For the system automation multi-platform base, we have quite a platform coverage on PC type systems. We are running with SAMP on Windows. We are running on Linux, both PCs and Blade Centers. And on the classical Unix servers, we are running on AIX. We are running on Linux for System P, Linux on System I. And we have currently prototype running on Sun Solaris, and this will become available as product soon. On System Z, we have system automation for ZOS, and we have system automation for multi-platforms running on Linux for System Z. Now let's move on to page 12, and let's focus on the main topic of this talk, which is IBM Tivoli System Automation Application Manager. Let's begin with the end-to-end automation. Chart 13 is an animated chart and it shows you the actual application architecture for a consumer electronics company. It's very, very complex. And if you press enter, you see that this complexity can at least to a certain degree be fed into the automation manager by describing the cross-cluster, cross-platform dependencies. So this end-to-end management capability can be modeled in these very simple policies, and thus very complex behavior can be made easier to manage by the operators. The end-to-end works cross-cluster, so it could be used to manage multiple ZOS sysplexes, for example, but it can also be used cross-platform, which means that you can also manage multiple sysplexes, multiple Linux application servers, multiple Unix servers running database or data mining or whatever. Okay, let's move on to page 14. The business issue which we are solving here, that we want to minimize downtime. For unplanned downtime, we see that a large portion is operations errors, so we can avoid operator errors by automating these things, making them very simple to use, and with the pre-tested way of defining these policies, you can simply with a keystroke do very complex things and avoid errors. 20% are environmental factors. If we have hardware failures, for example, we can move our applications to a backup node. And 40% are application failures, so if something breaks, we can either restart it in place or on a backup server, whatever. But we also can help relieving the planned downtime by supporting an optimal way of bringing down resources, and then after having applied maintenance, bringing up resources again, and thus minimizing the downtime window. Okay, let's move on to page 15. The value proposition for the end-to-end automation or for this application manager functionality is that we can reduce the labor costs associated with maintaining multi-tiered applications. We reduce the cost of downtime by shortening the repair and maintenance window and by reducing the operator errors. And the operators don't need to know these end-to-end level dependencies and sequences of doing things, because we can, as depicted in the picture, define groups, for example, which are cross-cluster and which then refer to resources running on these clusters. And we have also dependencies being managed across these clusters. Let's move on to page 16. So the customer benefits that are that the end-to-end automation integrates the high availability environment for heterogeneous applications, which means it improves the end-to-end automation and it reduces the cost. It is automated operation, so it helps you start, stop, restart, failover, move complicated things in an end-to-end environment, and it optimizes the IT staff resources such that it enables, for example, junior staff to perform complex things because they don't need to know all the details, and so the senior staff can focus more on the business generating tasks and on really the competitive edge type of thing for the customer. Let's move on to page 17. The way the end-to-end automation works is that we have on the end-to-end level references. So assume that we have an application A on a Linux cluster and that it needs a database on the CSS Flex. So we can define, for example, relationships like an application A must start after the DB2. We can have a second dependency like DB2 stops after application A. And the third dependency is, for example, an unexpected outage of DB2 has to terminate application A. So the way we define that in the policy, in the end-to-end policy, is that we have a DB2 ref. It's an object which is, if you will, a reference or a pointer to the actual DB2 set of resources running on the ZRSys Flex. And we have also a reference to the application A running on the Linux cluster. Now, these reference objects have their own life and they have their own desired operational state, so they maintain status, and the end-to-end manager manages that this status, this desired status, is maintained. If, for example, a local operator has to intervene and stop the application, then there will be a discrepancy between the actual observed state of application A and the desired state of this reference object. And a warning or an error will be displayed in the end-to-end automation. And also, for example, if the DB2 were stopped due to rule 3, it would make sure that the application is stopped while the DB2 is being maintained or kept down, and as soon as it pops up again, application A would also be restarted automatically. So this is the way end-to-end automation has this hierarchical approach to management. It can deal with conflicts on the higher level and resolve these conflicts by maintaining these references and managing the discrepancies between the reference and the real observed objects. Now let's move on to page 18. This is an example of a end-to-end policy. So in this example, we have a friendly end-to-end domain. It has two cross-platform applications. One is called stock trading application, and as you see, it has group constructs like the enterprise DB2, and it has certain dependencies like the front-end web server starts after the enterprise DB2, And these light yellow things are then these reference objects pointing to a whole hierarchy of resources running, say, on these lower level clusters. And then there is a second end-to-end application called Friendly Computer Shop, again with the same constructs. Also, you see that you do not need to specify the complete policy to this end-to-end manager, but only to the degree where you have these references pointing to some resources at the lower level cluster, at the first level domains. Okay, and also at the bottom of the chart you see that we have a couple of clusters, two sysplexes, FEplex 2, FEplex 1, and we have Linux clusters like FE cluster SAP. So remember this when we go through the screenshots now, showing you how this shows up in the end-to-end operations console. Page 19 shows you the end-to-end operations console. At the top left-hand corner, you see the domain hierarchy. So there you see the friendly end-to-end domain, and you see below it the four clusters we have been talking about. If you would open the twisty on the clusters, you would see the systems popping out. The active systems are black, and the inactive systems are grayed out, and so forth. Whatever domain you have chosen in this domain hierarchy, at the left-hand lower side, you see then the resources being defined. In this screenshot, we have selected the friendly end-to-end domain, so we see these end-to-end applications, the friendly computer shop and the stock trading application. So these are the ones. We see this in a pageable table, which is very good in being refreshed. It has good performance, so you can have thousands of resources being maintained in this table, and there is a breadcrumb trail to find where you are in the hierarchy. On the right-hand side, for the selected resource, on the left-hand side, for example, in this case, it's email hosting, 0, you see the owner, the domain it belongs to, a telephone number if you need help, a URL that you can, for example, look up how to deal with problems, and in the middle you have the resource reference. In this case, the overall status is green, the compound status, the observed state is offline, and the desired state is, by the way, also offline. We are, I think, the only management product which also can manage towards offline and will make sure that things, if they are supposed to be offline, stay offline until otherwise told. And that the compound state is green as long as observed state and desired state coincides. There is also a function called automation suspension. We can suspend certain automation and thus allow maintenance, for example, so we don't interfere while people are working on these parts to be maintained. Let's move on to page 20. An example, we have requests now that a certain resource is supposed to be online, put online, and we only want to see SAP resources with operator requests. So we have filtering capability. If you move on to page 20, you will see that we can select SAP star as a wildcard, and at the very bottom you can check that you only want to see resources with operator requests, and then pressing enter at page 20 you see the result that only SAP application server is the only one fulfilling this filter criterion, and that is a resource at the right hand side. You see that the resource works as desired, its observed state is online, the desired state is also online, but there is an operator request who has caused this. Now let's move on to page 21. If we want to do debugging in an unplanned situation, we see, for example, certain errors. You see these little red crosses. And, for example, if we want to find out why the banking application, which has a warning, we want to see why it is offline, then if we press enter and go on to page 22, we can choose the relationships tab at the right-hand side and see that there are a couple of relationships involves the banking application, and for us, there are two relationships. One, that banking application starts after IMS Connect, and banking application is forced down by IMS Connect, and we see that IMS Connect has a problem. So it's clear that the end-to-end manager has stopped the banking application because the IMS Connect is the culprit. Now, pressing directly on the IMS Connect will take us to page 23, to the resource where IMS Connect is in focus, and we see it at the right-hand side that IMS Connect has an error, the reference resource is in an error state. Now, if that is in an error state, let's follow the reference resource. It's further down on the right-hand side, and there is the resource imsconnect/apg, and it is a resource residing in FEPLEX 1. So seamlessly now we can, by clicking on that, navigate into the SysPlex, and by pressing enter, you see that now when we turn over to page 24, we all of a sudden are within the resource hierarchy of this first level SysPlex. You don't even see the difference. You can seamlessly navigate through all your environment end-to-end, all the platforms. And there you see that the IMS Connect APG group is broken because there are three members, but none of them is functional. All are in an error state, and if you would click on those, you would see that they are fatally broken. So this allows you to very fast identify the cause of the failure end-to-end. Now, press enter again. You see that the IMS Connect is causing the problem, and then you would call the operator and ask for help. Now let's move on to page 25, frequently asked questions. For example, I have my system automation ZIS policy defined already. With end-to-end, do I have to change my policies? Fast answer, no. You don't have to change anything. You just need to reference whatever is needed, what is interesting for cross-cluster dependencies. Otherwise, the end-to-end manager will dynamically explore what has been defined on the local cluster, in this case on the ZIS SysPlex. Page 26, frequently asked question, if I don't have cross-cluster dependencies, but I like to have the central point of control with my web console, can I use that without defining cross-cluster dependencies? Answer, yes, you can. You don't need to define the end-to-end policy. If you don't have one, then you just see all the resources in one central point of control. Now let's move on to page 27. Platform coverage, we are covering Microsoft Cluster Server on Windows, also SNP running on Windows, Linux on PC platforms, and Blade Centers on Sun and Unix systems, soon Solaris with Microsoft, with System Automation Multiplatform. But also if the customer does have Veritas Cluster Servers, for example, there's an adapter into end-to-end. On the other Unix flavors, AX, we support HACMP, we also support System Automation Multiplatform, and on the host side, we support Linux for System C and System Automation ZOS. Let's move on to page 28. We do have a command shell, so you can drive all what you can do in the operations console also out of a command script. So press enter again, you see that, for example, with the ls resources command, you can list all the resources corresponding to the resource hierarchy. If you press enter again, you can see that it's also available in table format. Page 29, launching context scenarios from the end-to-end automation console. If you have systems or clusters causing troubles, you can launch in context to the tab to get monitoring information about the systems or clusters. Vice versa, if you have, for example, tech events which have been sent to the tech by System Automation for multi-platforms and for the application manager, then you can just click on the message and then launch in context back to the resource and investigate navigating from the tech to our system automation console. Let's move on to page 30. The architecture is the following. We are running in a WebSphere application server, six environment system automation for multi-platforms. The end-to-end automation, or the new name application manager, is a J2EE application. It has generic adapters, and in these generic adapters we have specific plugins for the different clusters which we can manage. There is also the automation engine running in a separate daemon process, and we have the operations console running in the integrated solutions console ISC. Via EIF events, we are sending out events to tech, which in turn can store these events into the data warehouse. Let's move on to page 31 and now talk about the new functions which are coming. On page 32, we see our application, our solution architecture for our roadmap towards business continuity. On the lower hand, you see the clustered environments, Veritas Cluster Server, for example, MSCS or HACMP Cluster System Automation, Multi-Platforms Cluster System Automation, COS. In the middle layer, we see the application manager, this end-to-end management function, tying all these things together, and working together with GDPS. That is new, and I will show how it works. And on the top layer, we have now the integration with the new business continuity process manager, which will be a topic of a separate Tivoli talk in May. Now, let's move on, page 33. So we have a whole lot of integration going on between all these products. We have the application manager. It is integrated with the Tivoli Enterprise console. It sends EIF events. We can navigate with context from the tech console to the application manager. We integrate with this BCPM integration with the CMDB. We have tech talking to the business systems manager, and we have the data going into the data warehouse. Let's move on to page 34. A new function coming up, and which has been pre-announced in the GDPS 3.5 announcement, is an integration of the application manager with GDPS. So the application manager manages the applications on these open systems and on the host systems, whereas GDPS currently manages servers and data replication, but only with system C scope for the servers. And by integrating these functions, we will get a two-way communication. GDPS will notify system automation, the end-to-end automation, during a planned site switch and also during a disaster. So we now have a single point of control and an end-to-end coordinated automated shutdown of workload and automated recovery on the backup side. In the other direction, end-to-end automation will notify GDPS about serious application outages in a site which could be the beginning of a rolling disaster. Let's move on to page 35. We have two configurations. One is that we have the host environment writing to their data to a storage subsystem, and GDPS managing the mirroring of the data from site 1 to site 2. On the site 2 we have backup capacity both for ZOS and also for the distributed. In this configuration we assume that the distributed clusters are separate clusters and that they also write their data to the commonly replicated disks. If we press enter again, the second variant is on the lower hand side now, and it is the distributed cluster stretched across both sides with some private mechanism of replicating the data. This stretch cluster support will come a little bit later. Okay, if we go to page 37, we have now an animated chart showing a planned scenario, a disk subsystem scenario. If you press enter, the operator tells GDPSK system that now we want to start a planned hyperswap. We want to stop everything using the disk subsystem inside one because we need to do maintenance. Nine. If you press enter again, GDPS will tell the application manager to stop all the workload on the distributed systems which are not capable of hyperswap. So the end-to-end manager will take care of that. If you press enter again now, GDPS will do a planned hyperswap for the host systems and, for example, for the Linux, which are capable of running the applications while under the covers the operating system will switch over the I/O to the backup site inside too. Now if you press enter again after the successful hyperswap, GDPS will tell the application manager to restart the stopped applications, and now the switch is complete and we have stopped all the I/O to our primary disk subsystem end-to-end and can do our maintenance. If you press enter, we go on to page 38 and have now a second scenario, a unplanned scenario modeling a rolling disaster. If you press enter, let us assume we have a fire in our computing center. If the fire happens to hit these distributed clusters first, then the end-to-end manager will find out and will report a cluster fault to GDPS, and GDPS will create a takeover prompt like it would react to failures of host systems. Now, after the takeover prompt is answered, and if we assume that the site needs to be evacuated, GDPS will kill the host systems while the application manager will be informed to kill the distributed platform. So we power them off. New function with a so-called hardware adapter. Now press enter again. You will see that as a next step, when restarting the workload on site 2, first we need to get the capacity so we stop all unnecessary workloads. So we have a concept of business critical versus not business critical. All the not business critical will be stopped on both host and distributed, and then if you press enter again, finally the workload will be automatically started. And by the way, the application manager will make sure if you have cross cluster dependencies that it will come up in the right order. Okay, finally then site over is complete. So we have a full automation of both planned and unplanned scenarios end-to-end. Now press enter again. On page 39 we see that this application manager function will now be made available on ZOS. So you can deploy the application manager on ZOS and use this best of all hardware platforms, best of all operating systems to deploy this end-to-end management capability. New in the ZOS version is perhaps there is enhanced user security, and also we support a WebSphere network deployment setup for the end-to-end manager. Now press again, enter on page 40. We see that with this new version we also have now a new reporting function, so you can have a couple of different reports on our stop and restart times, so you can manage towards recovery time objective, and the report will show you, for example, a graphical display of the dependency hierarchy, what can be done in parallel, what must be serialized, and give you the measured restart times. If you are not content with the results, that you can then optimize your policy or optimize your configuration to get better restart times. Now on page 41, another new function is the CCMDB integration. So we will have a discovery library adapter putting the end-to-end policy into the CCMDB, and thus making for the business continuity process manager all this dependency and relationship and group information available also for crisis analysis steps. Now press enter again. A new function is also the graphical automation policy editor, where with drag and drop like capabilities you can very easily put together a policy with graphical elements showing your dependencies, showing your relationships, showing your groups. So it's very easy to use. Now, I'm finishing by telling you that since middle of April, we have started a beta program for this application manager. And if you have customers who are still willing to participate, it's going on, I think, until beginning of June. So if you have any customers and who might be interested, get them involved on this page. We have our contact person, Valerie Batchelor, and she should be informed, and then customers can still participate in the beta. Okay, page 44, this is the end of the presentation, and I would like now to turn it over back to Laura and open it up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lenz. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question, and we'll pause a moment to assemble the queue. Once again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And we'll take a question from Chris Smith.
Yes, hi. If I'm a TWS for ZOS customer and I'm an SA for multi-platform customer and I want to enable end-to-end, looking at your slide 30, I just want to make sure I understand this right. We're going to have application manager code running on ZOS. Also have that code running as a daemon on the multi-platform, the distributed platform, correct?
Okay, I have now put up the page 30. You will have the application manager. You can choose to have the application manager running on ZOS. You have TWS interacting with system automation for ZOS already in place, right?
Well, I'm just talking, strictly automation here. We've got SA for ZOS and multi-platform.
Oh, okay. So, you have multi-platform running where? Which kind of platforms do we have for SAMP?
I don't know. It's at, let's say it's Linux.
Okay, fine. Then you have the SA ZS running on the Sysplex, you have SAMP running on Linux, and now you can choose any platform which is supported by the application manager to run on. I would expect if this is a customer who is fond of ZOS, he would probably choose this new capability to run the application manager on ZOS. And then you would have adapters running. One adapter in your system automation ZOS cluster, only one needs to be there, and one adapter running in your Linux cluster. And they would connect to your application manager, and there you go.
Okay, so basically you just I'm getting a beep in my phone, I apologize. I heard you say you would have application manager running on Linux and ZOS, is that correct?
No, the application manager is running just on one platform, and you can choose whether you want to have it on ZOS, then it runs on ZOS. Then you don't need any piece of application manager. You only have the adapter running on your Linux.
Okay. I was confused about the adapter. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And once again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And we'll take our next question from Andrew Neller.
Good morning. I'm actually sales, but this was a very good presentation for me to help learn about the product. When we look at HACMP, and it shows that there's an adapter for SAMP, for the HACMP, what is this giving us versus what HACMP is already perhaps doing in an environment? Is there additional value add that they would get?
No. There are perhaps two questions which are behind this. One is, what is the difference between HACMP and SAMP? That's one question. The other question could be, what benefit do I have to use the SA application manager adapter to tie in HACMP into an end-to-end environment? Which flavor do you ask?
I guess if a customer is running HACMP right now, we'll take that question. Is there additional value add that they might want to purchase SAMP? And the other question is if go ahead, answer that one first.
Okay. So if they want to use SAMP to not manage AIX, but rather Windows or Linux or whatever, and then I think there's a benefit of using SAMP because they might not have clustered environments in that environment yet. Another question could be, do they want to replace HACMP with SAMP? And there I would say it depends. If the customer likes HACMP, has tested it, relies on it, and has successfully deployed it, then there is probably no good reason to change. Then he can stick with HACMP and tie it into the end-to-end automation if he wants to do that. If the customer is more interested in the policy concept, in managing applications, in this common policy concept across platforms, for example, and not so much interested in the deep integration of operating system resources like storage resources and so forth, then he might choose SAMP instead of HACMP and might consider to change.
Okay.
So HACMP is a mature product, is specialized on AIX, is deeply integrated with the operating system. SAMP, on the contrast, is cross-platform, has this consistent policy concept, is not so deeply integrated with one special operating system, but rather is one concept across platforms.
Okay, let me just ask then, if a customer did want to buy SAMP and they are running HACMP, it shows that there's an adapter for it. What exactly would that give them? I mean, would SAMP basically just take over? Or,
you would not run SAMP in concurrence to HACMP on the same node. That doesn't make sense.
Okay, because in one of the slides, on slide 27, it shows an adapter, and that's where I was confused. So.
On slide 27, I'm going there. Actually, we have on AIX one system you might have instrumented with HACMP, and typically HACMP setup is a two-cluster node. You have the two nodes totally symmetrical, and typically HACMP monitors the hardware. When the node goes away, it makes sure that your application is restarted on the backup node. That's the typical setup for HACMP, and if you want to keep that, you can use the adapter to tie it into end-to-end. Now, if you have a second cluster, for example, also an AIX, but you want to manage that one with SAMP, you would typically have perhaps also a 2-node cluster, could be up to a 32-node cluster, could be a big cluster, and you would typically do application monitoring, which means you not only monitor when the node leaves the cluster, but you monitor the application availability and do things when your process falls down, when the network adapter breaks, or whatever things you worry about, and recover. And for that, you have this common policy, and again, you can again tie it into the end-to-end manager. Remember, at the very beginning, I said we want to protect the customer's investment, so whatever is out there, we offer a way to adapt that into our end-to-end.
Okay. Can I ask you one other question, kind of off topic, but I just heard rumors that DB2 version 9.5 has a free license for SAMP. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. It's actually actually starting with DB2 version 8 that SAMP is delivered for free with DB2 UDB. And the license is restricted in the sense that it may only be used to make exactly this DB2 instance highly available. If you want to cover additional parts of your application with a system automation policy, then you need to buy a full-fledged license. But in order to only work with the DB2 in a highly available way, you get this for free by buying DB2.
And the purchase would integrate completely into the environment then?
Yes.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
And we have no more questions at this time. I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Lenz.
Okay, so I think our time is over. Thank you for your attendance. Thank you for your interest and also for the questions. See you perhaps again when I talk about the BCPM in May.
This does conclude today's presentation. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.